played by the National Youth Wind Orchestra of Great Britain, and Gavin Bryars, George Benjamin and Derek Bourgeois, played by the National Youth Brass Band of Great Britain. 3:30 for that. It's now 1 o'clock and time for the news, read by Susan Ray.
David Cameron has welcomed what he called the enormous confidence boost given to Britain by the Olympics. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, has spoken of a sense of pride. Both have suggested the national optimism could be used to help the country. The Prime Minister confirmed that the government had allocated an extra £80 million to fund Britain's top athletes until the 2016 Rio Games. Mr Cameron is hosting a conference at Downing Street this afternoon on tackling world hunger. Among those taking part is Kenya's Prime Minister, Raila Odinga. He said the spirit of the Olympic Games should be used as a springboard to tackle hunger, malnutrition and disease. It's been calculated that Britain will finish third in the medals table. Russia, which is in fourth position, cannot win enough golds now to overtake Team GB. Britain's final medal hopes are in boxing and the modern pentathlon. Police in South London investigating the disappearance of the 12-year-old Tia Sharp have charged her grandmother's boyfriend with her murder. Stuart Hazel, who's 37, is due in court tomorrow. Tia's grandmother and another man have been released on bail. Iran's interior minister says the number of people known to have died in two devastating earthquakes in the northwest of the country has been revised downwards, with 227 people killed. Nearly 1,400 others have been injured. Emergency teams are trying to help survivors in isolated villages. Police in Manchester are trying to trace a man wanted over a fatal grenade attack in the city. Dale Cregan, who's 29 and has a false eye, is thought to have been involved in two gun and grenade attacks in the city on Friday and an earlier fatal shooting. The man known as the voice of darts, the commentator Sid Waddell, has died at the age of 72. He'd been diagnosed with bowel cancer last September. The weather, it'll be largely fine, dry and warm across Scotland and most of northern and eastern England. Further south and west, it'll be cloudier with a scattering of heavy showers. And that's the BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
And it was read by Susan Ray. Time now on Radio 3 to join Lucy Skeeping for today's Early Music Show.
Thank you. Lunchtime greetings. That was a toccata, a bit of a display piece played there on Renaissance wind instruments. And it not only fanfares the start of the programme, but also the 400th anniversary this month of its composer, who we're featuring today, Giovanni Gabrieli. The scene is Venice, where for 27 years until his death in 1612, Gabrieli lived and worked. And what a wonderful, prosperous place it was for musicians. There was music making in the ducal chapel, in the churches, the civic institutions, in the streets and in private houses. So any trained, polished instrumentalist or singer found himself well employed. But Venice wasn't just a great stomping ground for busy professionals. It also looked after its less fortunate citizens through its confraternities, or the scuole, or trade guilds that provided charity for the poor and the sick. These were also religious establishments, and so they too needed to call upon performers and composers for their regular masses and for the grand celebrations each year that marked their particular saint's day. One of the oldest of these confraternities, and certainly one of the richest in terms of its building and incredible artwork, was the Scuola di San Rocco. Almost wall to wall with Tintorettos and more besides, it's still one of Venice's main tourist attractions, situated within the S bend of the Grand Canal, just a short walk from St Mark's Cathedral. Nowadays, the narrow, winding route from one to the other is packed with shops and cafes. But more than four centuries ago, it must have been extremely well trodden by Gabrieli, because from 1585, he was the organist in both establishments. And since the same groups of players and singers often worked in several different churches, much as they might do today, Gabrieli, in the centre of it all, must have spent a good deal of his time making sure the right performers were booked for the right venue, turned up at the right time, and with the right music, not to mention the right instrument.
Thank you.
the singers of Currende and Concerto Palatino, directed by Eric Van Navel, with Benedictus es Dominus, one of many pieces by Giovanni Gabrielli that may have been written for San Rocco in Venice, where he worked as organist. Although vocal music still dominated during Gabrielli's lifetime, a taste for purely instrumental music was now beginning to emerge in the form of what's known as a canzona. What particular instruments played which line was still not specified, but there was certainly a rich variety to choose from. Consorts or families of instruments, all in different sizes, offered a blended sound from the viols and recorders to the double-reeded Schaum family. While, as we're going to hear now in the next piece, the nimble cornet became the top member of the trombone family. This is Gabrielli's Canzo No. 1, La Spiritata, which may well have been one of the pieces he wrote for San Rocco. And by way of a contrast, it's followed here by a consort of viols.
Thank you.
Hesperian 20 with two instrumental canzonas by Giovanni Gabrielli. The singers who worked regularly for Gabrielli at San Rocco were paid well and were some of the best the city could muster. But it was on the annual feast day, the 16th of August, that all the stops were really pulled out. San Rocco was officially the protector from the plague. And with Venice being a seaport, receiving ships from all around the Mediterranean, the city had suffered from it more than most. Each year, the Doge and his entourage processed across the Grand Canal by boat to the Church of San Rocco, accompanied by the musicians of St Mark's, many of whom then stayed on to perform at the Great Hall of the Confraternity. We can't be sure which of his compositions Gabrielli wrote specifically for San Rocco, but there are some fascinating clues left to us, funnily enough, by an Englishman called Thomas Coryat. If you happened to catch yesterday's early music show, you'll have heard more about him. But briefly, he was a traveller. And how? Some 100 years before the Grand Tour became fashionable, Coryat finally made it to Venice in 1608. And in his journal, he describes being at the Festival of St Rocco and hearing vocal and instrumental music, so rare, as he put it, so admirable that it did ravish and stupefy.
Thank you.
fear and trembling overwhelm me. La Cappella Ducale and Musica Fiata Köln, directed by Roland Wilson, with Gabrielli's motet Timor et Tremor. This is one of his more intimate chamber pieces. It's for three violins and continuo, a style that was to become more and more popular in Italy as the century progressed. Nevertheless, it was evidently something quite new to the ears of the English traveller Thomas Coriat. "Of the treble viols, I heard three at St. Rocco," he wrote. "Each was so good that I never heard the like before." Sonata for Three Violins by Gabrielli, performed by the Taverner Players, directed by Andrew Parrott. Our friend Thomas Coriat, visiting Venice in 1608, described the Great Hall of San Rocco as a very sumptuous building, richly gilt and decked with many embossings of gold and with sundry delicate pictures. So, yes, it was and still is incredibly palatial. But it was also intimate, and it's not hard to imagine that many of Gabrielli's smaller-scale choral pieces were actually much better suited to its warm, clear acoustics than to those of St Mark's. This is In Ecclesiis. Our God, we call upon you, set us free, keep us safe, and restore us to life. the Gabrielli Consort and Players, directed by Paul McCreesh, with Gabrielli's In Ecclesiis, possibly written for San Rocco in Venice. Well, we heard one of Gabrielli's wind instrument fanfares at the beginning of the programme, and we've got another one now. It's from his collection of canzoni, published in 1615, and it's characterised by an echo effect. Here's Musica Fiata Köln with Gabrielli's Canzon in Echo. Gabrielli's Canzon in Echo. This characterful early wind sound is also very effective, though, for more solemn sorts of pieces, as we'll hear now in his particularly beautiful setting of Dulcis Jesu. It's an extraordinary work, with the two solo voices singing slow, sustained lines as the instruments weave faster-moving phrases around them. And it's all made more powerful by Gabrielli's dividing the performers into three groups, who finally come together to produce one big sound.
Thank you.
Dulcis Jesu by Giovanni Gabrielli, performed by the Gabrielli Consort and Players, directed by Paul McCreesh. Well, we've been listening to quite a variety of works by Gabrielli, but as organist of San Rocco, he also performed regularly himself. Venetian organs at this time were still comparatively small, simple instruments, but their casings could be incredibly elaborate, built by the very best craftsmen, painters, sculptors and gilders. And so virtuosic was Gabrielli's playing that musicians came from far and wide to hear him. Many, including Heinrich Schütz, wanted to study with him. Here's Roberto Micconi with one of Gabrielli's ricercars, a sort of display piece based upon one specific theme. Roberto Micconi was the organist in Gabrielli's ricercar on the 7th and 8th tones. Well, that's almost it, I'm afraid, but we do have time for just one more piece. Gabrielli has been described as a learned writer of organ music, a true original in the field of instrumental ensemble music, and a master of the ceremonial motet. And it's this last form that we're going to hear now, his setting of Jubilate Deo from his impressive collection entitled Symphoniae Sacrae, or Sacred Symphonies. A short instrumental introduces the singers, and here we find Gabrielli using a variety of techniques and textures, solo voices, solemn counterpoint, energetic imitation, and moments of joy as everyone comes together in the repeated Jubilate.
Thank you.
Giovanni Gabrieli's 10-part Jubilate Deo, performed on that recording by the Taverner Choir and Players, conducted by Andrew Parrott. And it ends today's early music show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping. Just to add that from tomorrow morning, you can download a version of the programme. Just go to the BBC Radio 3 website and follow the links to the early music show. Next Saturday, Lucy returns to present a programme of music by the German composer Zacho. That's at the same time here on BBC Radio 3, just after the 1 o'clock news.
Vaughan Williams on BBC Radio 3 from the BBC Proms. Fourth, Fifth and Sixth Symphonies. Powerfully emotional works from the 1930s and 40s, which chronicled our national life in troubled times. Thursday night at the BBC Proms on Radio 3 from 7:30.
Back to this Sunday afternoon, it's a little after 2 o'clock. And now another chance to hear the Proms Saturday matinee, first broadcast live from the Cadogan Hall in London on the 28th of July. It's presented by Christopher Cook.
In today's Proms Saturday matinee, an afternoon of French Baroque music, Sir Roger Norrington conducts Les 24 Violons du Roi, a recreation of what is probably the first ever professional orchestra. The original 24 Violins of the King was founded by Louis XIII in 1626. And here at Cadogan Hall, their modern counterparts, a collaboration between the Royal College of Music and the Paris and Orsay Conservatoire, are going to play music by Desmarais, Marais, Comprat and Lalonde. Much of this music was written for Louis XIV, that most musical of French monarchs. As a young man in the 1650s, Louis was irresistibly drawn to the stage and appeared regularly in ballets with his favourite composer, Jean-Baptiste Lully. Indeed, when Louis became the undisputed master of France, Lully was given the top musical job at court. Tirelessly ambitious, he set about consolidating his position as France's foremost composer. And it was his operas that earned him his reputation. French operas, tragédie lyrique, that turned their back on foreign models imported from Italy, and which blended opera and ballet into a single entertainment. Armide was Lully's last but one work for the stage, and it was given its first performance at the Palais Royal in Paris in 1686. And Les 24 Violons du Roi, led by Patrick Cohen-Achindine, is going to play a suite of ballet music from Armide. 5 movements, beginning with the overture to the opera and concluding with a passacaglia. The 24 Violons of the King are conducted by Roger Norrington.